International loan finance. We are looking at the nature of the international syndicated lending market. I have set out all of this in the draft chapter provided. We're looking at the euro loan market. We're looking at how these term loans, as well as supporting revolving loan facilities, can support a whole other wide range of types of lending arrangements. We'll see that through this list of loan facilities provided here. We'll look at loan structures. We'll look at the key financial terms, the principal. The term is the duration. The interest, floating or fixed. Repayment, as well as the drawdown initially. And then the obligations that apply. We're going to see there's three key sets of obligations. We have the conditions precedent, the CPs. We have the representations and warranties, the R&Ws, the reps. And then we have the covenants or the cuffs. And we'll come back and look at all of this in further detail. We need to understand the issue procedure. The documentation in this area is very limited. All that has to happen is the lead bank needs to get a mandate to put the syndicate together, so we have a mandate letter. We then have a term sheet which outlines, summarizes all of the core financial and legal terms of the deal. And then we have the information memorandum, which provides all of the relevant and necessary information by the borrower and the borrower's group to explain its condition, history, background, future operations, how it's basically going to repay the loan that's drawn down. That's to provide all of the necessary information to allow the banks to take a full credit assessment. The banks assess the credit standing of the borrower and they determine how much they're going to lend and at what price. What's the interest rate? And then we have the loan documentation itself. So it's very simple. The bank deals, the loan deals, tend to be very straightforward. There's a short, limited number of documents involved. The heavy law is in the loan agreement, so the substantial document that we'll have is just one large, detailed loan agreement. All of the other document tends to be quite light, quite peripheral around that. What we will see when we go on to look at capital market deals, capital market transactions, there's a large number of other documents because there's a large number of other parties involved. And whenever you have additional parties, each relationship between each sets of parties requires another document. So all that tends to happen is this. We have one major loan agreement, which is the legally enforceable document that the parties will enter into. We can virtually evidence all of the rights and obligations in that one document. In other more complex capital markets deals, including bonds, securities, warrants, project finance, securitization, all of the other types of deals we'll come on to look at separately, there's a large number of other parties, so there's a large number of other documents. What tends to then happen is a lot of the other documents tend to be much shorter. The specific value and benefit of the loan market is that we can basically consolidate, contain, articulate, incorporate all of the core legal rights and obligations in a single document. We then need to look at the nature of syndication. That's the relationship between the lending banks. I explain this in terms of five core principles: severality, proportionality, equality, democracy, and limited agency function. And then we're going to go on and look at agent and lead bank liability. The point simply is this. If the borrower can't pay, and we're talking about very large amounts of money, possibly $100 million typically, how can the banks recover? Can they sue each other? Can they sue the arranging bank? Can they sue the lead bank? It's a core important issue to do with liability. We have to understand the rights and obligations of the various parties, the liability, and then the rules for managing and limiting liability. What we're trying to do in these large complex deals is ensure that the party most able to bear the loss assumes the loss. In non-credit-linked instruments like this, in the narrow loan market itself, when we're looking at other larger structures such as in project finance, if we have uncovered risk, we'll use insurance. But we don't need that. In this case, all we're going to do is allocate the loss through the documentation we have. But we have to consider specifically if the borrower cannot repay and the borrower's group does not have the funds to discharge the loans, do the parties have any other rights against each other? And because there's a limited number of parties, we can understand all the possible heads and how we can manage these in practice, principally through the use of exclusion clauses and other legal protections. There are nevertheless statutory limits on our ability to do that, so we need to understand this in further detail. We will then go on and look at the loan conditions and obligations in further detail. We have three key sets of provisions. We have the conditions precedent, the CPs, which are principally to do with documents, constitutional provisions. We have the representations and warranties, the reps and W's, and we have legal warranties and financial and commercial representations and warranties. And then we have the covenants or the covs. Specifically, we have the corporate covs. The three most important are the negative pledge, the pari passu, and the disposal restrictions. We also have financial covenants, information, and general undertakings. What we'll basically see is this. I will give you a standard loan document, it's around 100 pages, and I will give you a one-page summary of that so that we can visually see how all of the clauses tie together. What we're trying to do is this. We need to understand this not as a flat, written piece of work, but as a living document. How all the clauses support each other, how they all interrelate, and how they actually come alive in practice. That's what we're going to try to do. But one of the things we specifically want to try and understand is the nature of the relationship between each of these core provisions. It will look like there's possibly overlap or inconsistency, but this is actually just provisions reinforcing other provisions. We'll see that when we look in detail at the specific provisions in the CPs, in the reps and W's, the financials and the legals, as well as in the covs, the corporate covs and the financial covenants. Well, we'll see how all of this comes together. There is overlap, but that's intentional, it's deliberate, it's principally to protect the interests of the banks because they're providing the funds, they're making all of this available, and usually in practice in these markets on an unsecured basis. So there's no separate security, so the banks need to try to protect their interests as far as they can under the document. The basic principle that arises here is simply this. The banks want as much not control over the day-to-day activities of the borrowers because they don't need that, but they want as much control as they can to protect their investment and their interest without becoming liable for the day-to-day decisions that the borrowers take. They don't want to become shadow directors. This is very important, but they want as much control as they can without that. And what we will see is you can do that mainly through clever, well-drafted, intelligent documentation and contractual provision. Principally through information provision and then specifically through the financial clauses. The financial ratios that we're going to impose, we can establish a very substantial degree of oversight and limitation on the activities of the borrower that may otherwise prejudice the interests of the banks. And then we will then see how other provisions support that and reinforce that. The three core sets of provisions are effectively the financial provisions, which I've listed under loan structures on the left-hand side. So principal, term, interest, drawdown and repayment, and then the obligations. So we've then got the obligations, point two as 1, 2, 3, the CPs, the reps and W's and the covs, and then we support that with the defaults. So those are the three key sets of measures, provisions in all documentation, all financial documentation. What are the financials? What are the obligations? And what are the defaults? All you need to do to understand a very large, complex, 1,000 page, 2,000, 10,000 page document or transaction or set of related documents is look for these core provisions. Where are the financials? Where are the obligations? Where are the defaults? And in practice, what will happen is you will become very familiar with the standard clauses which are prepared in the market anyway, so you know what's expected, what's reasonable, what's generally regarded as appropriate in particular circumstances, so you will be able very quickly to identify that goes too far, that doesn't go far enough, we need to reconsider this. And you will do that both from the perspective of acting as the banker, the lawyer on behalf of the creditors providing the funds, and separately, depending upon the particular deal, your client, the borrower, if they're drawing down the funds under this. The point simply is this, there's only three core sets of provisions we really need to understand, the financials, the obligations, and the defaults. These are all in very standard terms, very standard structures, very standard content. And because you will know what to expect in most deals, you can simply go straight to these provisions, check these clauses, and if they work well, you can form a very quick opinion as to the overall value, benefit, validity, and value of the transaction. We then reinforce the loan default with default remedy provisions, bottom right, and then loan transfers. Historically, you could not transfer loans. Loans are private debt obligations between two parties on a bilateral, immediate, direct basis. Historically, you couldn't transfer that. I believe that was actually why we used to have debtors' prisons. If debtors couldn't pay, they would go to jail. Now we have developed other more effective means for transferring debt. We principally do it through assignment, legal assignment, or equitable assignment, but we can also have novation, participation, sub-participation. There's other devices we can use, including trusts and securitizations. There are mechanisms, so we need to understand how these operate in practice, so I deal with that in the paper, focusing specifically on assignment, novation, participation, risk participation, and securitization. If anything goes wrong, we also have to consider loan restructuring. Loan restructuring involves renegotiating the terms of the arrangement. The borrower is finds itself in a situation where it can't make all of the relevant payments. The core risk in the banking and financial area is credit risk. Credit risk is the exposure that's created by the possibility that the borrower will not do two things. It will not pay interest during term, and it will not repay interest during term, and it will not repay principal on maturity. Those are the two key aspects of credit risk. That's what the banks need. They need interest during the term of the loan, and then they need repayment of principal at the end. If the borrower finds themselves in a position whereby they can't service the loans, we will look to some form of rescheduling. In practice, we do not want to cancel the transaction immediately, because that usually then simply pushes the borrower into default. It also becomes more complex in large deals, dealing with governments and dealing with large corporate borrowers, because they will have large numbers of other commitments outstanding under a large series of other loan deals and capital market deals, and most of these, almost all of these, will have cross-default provisions. So if there's a default under one deal, it's automatically treated as a default under all of the others. We have to be very careful with how this operates in practice. What we are usually going to want to do is to negotiate. The banks will always be prepared to negotiate. They want to ensure that they get as much interest as they can and as much, if not all, of their principal back. So you will renegotiate. We have very powerful default provisions, default clauses, to put the banks in a position whereby during the course of that renegotiation, they're in the strongest position. So we can actually get very generous terms. What will normally happen is this. You will extend the durations and you will reduce the interest payments. Again, in practice, the rule tends to be if it's a sovereign debt, if it's lent by another government or it's lent by an international financial institution, you rarely cancel the principal amount. You can extend duration and reduce the interest. You rarely cancel sovereign and IFI debt. If it's private lending, you can do. So if you're looking for haircuts, you will reduce outstanding amounts on the private debt rather than the IFI or the sovereign debt. What also tends to happen, the general rule, is that you'd always try to pay down your capital markets, your bond positions, your note positions, your commercial paper, so that you can always go back into the markets. So what you will do is, if you're a government or a company, if you're in difficulty, you always service your capital market debt. You try to renegotiate your bank debt. That's how it's generally done. There's three main models for renegotiation. We have the London Club, the Paris Club, and the specific arrangements with the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank called HIPIC, for heavily indebted borrowers. We have three core sets of rules. The difference between the London Club and the Paris Club is that the Paris Club deals with renegotiating debts between governments themselves. So that's sovereign lending between sovereign lending. Paris. The London Club is for debt by banks to sovereigns. When the banks lend to governments, banks lend to countries, you'll renegotiate under the London Club. If it's sovereigns to sovereigns, governments to governments, or IFI debt, you'll go to the Paris Club. The Paris Club meetings tend to be held in Paris. They're usually chaired by a member, a representative from the Ministry of Finance in Paris. The London Club moves around. It tends to be a bit more flexible, but they're both very useful indeed. And we saw all of this. We had the global financial crisis. We had a lot of debt rescheduling, renegotiation after the crisis, in particular, for example, with regards to the position in Greece. What actually happened there was a large haircut. There was a large write-down on the private debt. I think it was about 35%. But the International Monetary Fund, the European Commission, a lot of these international organizations, they wanted full payment. But what they were prepared to do was to extend the duration and lower the interest payments. They're trying to allow a reasonable management of this. And with all of that, we can understand the basic structure and nature of the international loan market, and we will go through all of this in further detail.